The following programming is sponsored by D&D Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Jeff Gross Show here on WWDB. Talk 860, fantastic broadcast, lots to do, lots to talk about, a great week. The fall is my favorite time of year. Jeff Gross, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thanks for asking.
I am happy to be here, man, and we've got a fantastic guest, Steve Wolf, Law Offices of Stephen E. Wolf. How are you, sir?
Terrific, Joe. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, and the first thing that struck me is when you walked in is your Eagles Super Bowl shirt you have on there.
Absolutely. Had a great time out there back in, 8 years ago?
It was in 18.
Yeah, 6 years ago.
And so having said that, very interesting. We're going to talk a little Phillies. We'll talk a little Eagles. The first NFL weekend just passed. So we'll jump into that. Then, of course, we'll talk about the law and showcase the practice. But tell that story that you just said about you went to the game, you were in the last row in the corner, and what happened?
I took my dad to Minnesota. He hates the cold, and it was at least 5 below. We stayed an hour outside of Minneapolis. The wind chill was 40 below.
Wow.
We stayed for the weekend. He was in a wheelchair. I took him down to the game. We had seats in the last row, upper deck, in the corner of the end zone. And could not get the wheelchair up there, so I went to the NFL office, and I said, can you do anything for me? My dad's in a wheelchair. He wants to see the game. They said, give me a minute. Came back, gave me 2 tickets, said, go to these seats. Had no idea where they were. 50-yard line, first row of the second level.
Oh, my.
Phenomenal.
God.
So now that is what I'm going to do for every
exactly.
Game.
And what a game, and what a game. I left that game, and I said, if I die and never see a football game, I'm happy.
You know, we've been doing radio for 10 years, and I can't tell you how many times in the first 5 years that I said, I just want to see one parade of green down Broad Street. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm looking at you young kids here on the broadcast, and I'm going to take a shot at this. But, of course, we've all seen the Flyers win, even though it was the Broad Street Bullies. We saw the Sixers win. Of course, we've seen the Phillies, right? Of course. You know, I just wanted to see at least one parade. Now, I feel bad for my son because he likes the Sixers and the Flyers, and it may never happen in his lifetime if the way things are going. But that was such a momentous – your dad must have been over the hill.
He was over the moon. I got to tell you, though, I was at the Flyers Stanley Cup victory in 1974. Mm-hmm. I was on the ice with Bernie and Clark as they were skating the cup around. I was one of the lunatics on the ice.
Wow.
I was at the 1986 game where they won the World Series.
Oh, my God.
I was there in 2008 for the game when they won the World
Series.
Brad
Lidge.
So I'm blessed. I am absolutely blessed.
I missed one. I was there for the 73-74 Flyers. Mm-hmm. And I did not go on the ice. I was a little kid. And I was there for the 2008, the World Series. But I did miss the other one.
Well, I could. So it was such a moment. I equated to this, and this sounds crazy, but I was telling a sports talk guy this several years back. And I said, you know, I look at it like this. You know, you're growing up, you want to have kids, right? And you know, you can't have them, and it's very difficult, okay? But you finally have one, okay? So one kid, 7 kids, you can die a happy person, right? Well, that's the way I look at it. Now every time I see somebody with a Steelers jersey on, I'm going, yeah, between us, we have 8 Super Bowls, man. You know, so that one Super Bowl, even though, of course, you know, it would have been nice against Kansas City. And I needed
I was at that
see.
One, too.
So was I.
That was not a good walk of shame at the end.
It was, I know, but the worst one ever. I mean, you know, it was 1980. I mean, literally, God. I mean, you know, I can't even watch. I can't watch a Super Bowl that we lost, which means I don't watch the other three. But that game in particular, it was over before we knew it against a wild card team, the Raiders, who, by the way, we beat on, in, you know, I guess at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So here we are. okay, and it, you know, it's my favorite time of the year. It's football and baseball season. Okay, the Phillies. Obviously, we'll talk about them in a minute. You're actually heading down the game, right, Steve?
I am.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the home stretch now. A lot going on there. But before we get into that, it's the end of the first weekend of the NFL. And any thoughts, Jeff?
I was not happy, even though they won that game. I was not happy with the game. I thought it was ridiculous that they were there. I thought it was ridiculous that they were playing on that particular field, which was slippery.
Another bad field.
Awful.
Another bad field. And I don't think Jalen played the way he could have played. So even though they won, I have ridiculously high expectations for Jalen Hurts. And for whatever reason, I never am satisfied.
He looks like he's in a trance when he's on. What are your thoughts, Steve, on the game?
He had two picks. He's lucky he didn't have three. Could have been four, actually, from what I saw. I was not happy at all with what I saw.
Yeah.
But I was really happy with the way Quinyon Mitchell played.
Oh, yeah.
Really happy the way Saquon played. So there's some really bright spots.
Yeah, I mean, Saquon is like, you know.
Yeah,
I mean he's a different type of dude. I mean he is, strong as a ball and quick as a cat.
Yeah.
But having said that, I'll throw something in there also.
Best part about Saquon is that we got him from the Giants.
Oh yeah,
that's right. That makes it sweet.
It does make it sweet, and you know we'll get into that Hard Knocks. I'm sure you saw that with the GM of the Giants. But let me just say this: it is odd. Okay, it was an odd game. Okay, but at the same time, it's like preseason. I mean, right now, you know, the teams are getting the kinks out. They don't play the starters anymore. They only play three preseason games. Starters rarely see the field. So in a lot of ways, the first three games, maybe the first four, are, you know, everybody's going through their, you know, getting the kinks out, you know. Our defense looked phenomenal at the beginning. Like we were stopping, you know, but, you know, listen, I also was not by any stretch happy that they were, playing in Brazil. The field.
That field was a disgrace.
Horrible.
How do you not figure that out before the game starts?
Well, how about the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wild card, right? You assume, and then you see Saquon first play of the game, tries to cut back right on his face. So they say that soccer fields are not good for NFL football. And so
plus there, the humidity was out the wazoo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what really contributed to it.
Yeah, it was like it was no question like a preseason game. I mean, we'll take the W, but damn. You know, certainly it was, right. There was so much going. By the way, how about the last play of the game with Love? Like he went to
eat. My God. What was he doing?
I mean,
throw the ball. What are you doing?
Well, not that guy. That was his backup. I'm talking about when he got
hurt. Yes.
I mean, that I don't like to see anybody get hurt. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. Thank God it's not for the whole year.
Yeah.
Especially with that contract.
Yeah.
Let's segue to the Phils real quick. Odd weekend. You know, love to see if we could get a fifth starter. Okay. I mean, you know, it's just wacky.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And any thoughts on the home stretch here?
I'm surprised they didn't bring up Andrew Painter, frankly.
How's he doing?
I don't know.
You don't hear much? I mean, I've been wondering about Painter for a long time. Yeah. They never talk about him.
Yeah. I'm glad they got rid of Soto.
Oh, him and Dominguez, of course, those two had a role, no question about it. They just, we're the only team. And I get it. Is this because I live in the heart of Philadelphia? But you know, we have the best record in baseball, and I'm looking at this team. We're the only team where we have two to three guys throwing 100 miles an hour, okay, who cannot get a high school kid out, okay. Literally speak, Soto throws 98 to 100, and you know it's. You know, it's been strange. Harper, that worries me. Although he's hitting 385 during it.
But he almost got one yesterday. It bounced off the top of the wall.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you because as soon as we got down, I started doing some work on a computer. I turned to the left, and there we were down 10-0. And then you know, a movie came on. So we'll see what happens. It's a marathon and a sprint. So, Jeff, if you would remind our listeners a little bit about Gross and Kenny and what you do.
So we handle workers' compensation claims. We litigate workers' compensation claims representing only the injured worker, never the insurance company, never the employer. And we've been doing this, I've been doing this for 35 years. And so I love what I do. And that's it. Workers' compensation 24/7.
And having said that, you're located right in Center City, right?
Yeah, I'm at 15th and JFK, 1500 JFK Boulevard, right in the heart of Center City, and very well centrally located. So we operate all around the state, though. We also do New Jersey.
Steve Wolf, a little bit about yourself and your practice.
I do not do workers' compensation. My practice is plaintiff's personal injury. I only represent injured people, and I also represent small businesses. I've been doing that for 45 years.
And when you say personal injury, talk about what the range of personal injury is that you represent.
I do all aspects of personal injury: motor vehicle, slip and fall, medical negligence, legal negligence. Unfortunately, I've had to take a couple of cases against attorneys that really messed up some cases. So just about any type of injury that you can think of, we've handled it.
And so, having said that, you know, let's get into a little bit boutique firms. You know, the benefits of what someone can expect. Okay, certainly, you know, it's an opportunity for you know the client to meet the face of the place and to you know always be, you know, dealing directly with the attorney that they that is representing them. Talk about how important that is for you, Jeff.
It's really important. We welcome face-to-face meetings with our clients. These days, it's very hard to come by, though, because most clients would rather do everything by either internet or email or phone call. And so we do that, too. Don't get me wrong, but it's much, much better to be able to meet my client face-to-face, and we always welcome them. We're not a phone practice here. We're here. So I'm here every day. So I can meet with my clients, and I can talk to them and see them, and it's extremely important because you get to know your client a lot better through face-to-face interaction as opposed to over the phone where, you know, you don't even know if the guy's wearing pants. So the point is that it's much better in person, and we do accommodate that.
Steve, your thought, because that is a kind of a holdover from the pandemic.
Okay? Yeah,
it's one of those things that changed things. A little bit about what clients can expect in your case.
I agree with Jeff 100%. And let me just say this: I've been in sole practice my entire career. I meet with all the clients personally. We encourage them to come in. Sometimes they don't want to come in. We have to do it through Zoom. Sometimes they want to talk on the phone. But we do encourage them to come in because I feel that you can't develop a relationship with your attorney. I can't develop a true relationship with a client unless I'm sitting there looking them in the face. And my practice is a little bit different than Jeff's because Jeff's in Center City. I'm out in Bucks County. And the folks out there are a little bit different. They want to see you. They want the hand holding. They want the warmth. Our office is set up like a living room. Literally, it's set up like a living room because we want people to be comfortable. I have a legal assistant, a paralegal, who's been with me for 14 years. She babies them. She babies the clients, and they love her.
I heard somebody one time say, and it was during the pandemic, but that it was an odd and a different type situation, specifically at the beginning of a call, at the beginning of a case where you're just meeting somebody, you may not even have closed the deal yet. Okay, doing it on Zoom is a different dynamic. Talk about that I'm not going to say how frustrating it is, but what is the difference in the dynamic, you know?
Well, on Zoom, you don't really have the interaction that you do face-to-face because when you're face-to-face, there are no other interruptions. when I'm talking to a client on Zoom, a lot of times they'll be distracted by their kids. They'll be distracted by other things that are going on and wherever they're Zooming from. And frankly, they're not concentrating 100% because they're not able to on our task at hand. And so when I meet with them personally, face-to-face, all that goes away, and we're just literally concentrating on what we need to talk about and, of course, other things. I like to talk to them about other things besides their lawsuit because I like to, or their claim, because I like to get to know them.
Well, and it seems like that dynamic when they're, you know, and I get it because back then, you know, you had to do it. You were required to do it for the most part. Did you find it, harder to not only connect, but also to close the deal? You know what I mean? Like, because you may have somebody now who didn't even have to leave their house.
Well, there are two types, right? They're the client. They're the clients that really don't read what they sign, and they just sign their lives away. And I try to explain. They're like, yeah, I got it, and they'll sign it. They're the other types that don't trust anything. And then I have to go over everything ad nauseum with them. When they're here, I can go over the agreement and show them what I'm talking about. On Zoom, I have to either enlarge my screen or I have to have them get this sent to them in advance and have them review it. And half the time, we're not on the same page in terms of where we're looking. So I have to explain everything to them in a different way. I find that it's a lot easier when they're here and it's a 1-2-3 done.
And Steve, in your experience, when it is a Zoom type situation, what is the different dynamic that you? Because you said you're up in Bucks County. It's in a sense, it's a community right there. What is the difference that you find?
I take real issue, and I think Jeff and I are both old school in this regard. But I really take issue with the firms that are now advertising like it's something special or something to be proud of, that you don't have to come into the office. You don't have to leave your sofa. And some of the larger firms and some of the, what I'll characterize as mills offer that and promote that. I've always believed that you've got to have a relationship with a client. And the only way to do that is in person. And that's paid off for us over the years because our repeat clients have been phenomenal. We've got dozens of letters that folks have sent to us thanking us for the work.
There's testimonials on your website.
There's testimonials on there's a bunch of them, and we don't solicit them at all. We've represented families over years, and the only way that happens is if people feel some sort of camaraderie, some sort of relationship with you.
Yeah, it's like a bank, right? If you don't have a relationship with your bank, you bank there because you bank there. And once you start banking and you continue to bank there, nothing changes. But if they raised the rates or they did something untoward, you would move your accounts in a heartbeat because you wouldn't trust them. In a face-to-face situation, you're able to sit down with your clients, and we're not a bank. We're not a, as Steve put it, we're not just sitting here, pushing paper. So in order to have a more meaningful experience as a client, your best bet is to come in and see me because then I can talk about your concerns. It's not a 1-2-3 quick thing where we're done and then you have all these questions that you don't feel like you want to ask because you're afraid it's going to take too long or you don't feel like I'm paying attention because I'm on Zoom or whatever the reason is. When you're here in person, you're much better off. You're much better off in terms of getting to know me and getting to know what I'm about. And then getting to know about your own case and what to expect. That's the one thing I do is I give everyone a sense of expectation, where they're going, where we're going as a team.
Well, and I'll say this, okay, and I'm going to get into that. But before I do, you mentioned, so there's, I'm not going to get into any names, but they're national, and they have these commercials, and they're huge. Well, I have... an associate that is actually represented by them. And he has been in a situation. He lives in Philly, but the firm is in that the branch where he signed up was in Florida. And he had a hearing on a Monday and still couldn't get in touch with his attorney on a Friday. He calls that particular firm, and they're a national one, and I'm not going to, I won't name them, the McDonald's of law firms, right? And I thought,
and don't get me wrong, there's a niche to that.
I get it. I'm not cut. But
it's a business model.
But I do think that it was funny. You know, it was a hilarious comment. He was frustrated when he said it. But let's talk about that all important first meeting with somebody, because in both your cases, and a personal injury case and a work comp case, especially for individuals that in work comp who have tried to navigate the system on their own and find themselves, tied up in a pretzel, and personal injury where, it could take a year, 2-3 years on something, and it's and setting. And so when we talk about that all important first meeting, okay, and setting the tone and setting expectations, talk about that. I'll go to Steve first. Steve, talk about the importance of that first meeting, and talking about the ebbs and flows of a case. Insurance companies, as we all know, are in the business of taking premiums, not paying them out, no matter how obvious something is. Talk about setting expectations and setting your client up for success for the long haul, so that they don't walk out of there, and think to themselves, well, 2 to 3 weeks, the lady who got spilled the coffee on McDonald's, of course, she got paid relatively quickly. Where am I at, right? Yeah. Talk about the importance of that first meeting and why in-person really is beneficial because of that.
Well, let me tell you this. All of my meetings with my clients are at a minimum an hour to an hour and a half. Because for the same reason that Jeff mentioned, I want to get to know them. I want to know not only about their injury, not only about their accident, but I want to know what their family situation is. I want to know what their medical history is. I want to know everything that I need to know to begin this case and to move forward with it. And I always look at a case that you don't prepare for trial when you get the notice from the court that you're going to be on trial in a month. You prepare for trial from day one. And in order to do that, you've got to collect a lot of information. And clients will sit with me in the meetings and they'll say, well, why do you need to know this? Why do you need to know that? And my response to them is, listen, the insurance company is going to fight us tooth and nail. Well, this was a clear accident. I was hit in the rear, or whatever it is, whatever the clarity might be. And my response is, you're not going to get paid quickly because they don't pay money quickly. They're going to fight you because they want to hold on to the money and get the most out of their investments. So they're going to put us through our paces. So I've got to be prepared from day one to show them that we're serious and that we're going to take them to the wall if that's what we have to do. I don't want to do that. I don't want to drag you through 3 years of litigation. But if they make us do it, we're prepared to do it. I think if you see a client on Zoom or you talk to them on the phone without seeing them or some other remote contact,
it's a hard point to get across.
It's a hard point to get across. And it also, there's so much competition out there with some of the firms like you're talking about, that if they don't see, and on TV, it makes it look like, you come here.
You get your money in a bag.
You get your money and you go. So they're more likely to go somewhere else if you don't have a relationship with them. Another point I just want to bring up, and this is an interesting thing that I only happened to meet last week. I had a medical negligence case come into my office, and it was a case that I wasn't thrilled about taking. I wasn't happy with the liability issues. I wasn't sure that it was a winner. So I called another firm, probably the one that you're talking about. And I got a very nice woman on the phone, and she thanked me for calling. And I said, hello, my name is Steve Wolf. I'm an attorney in Bucks County. I'd like to speak to an attorney in your office so that I can potentially refer this medical negligence case to you. The response was, thank you so much for calling. We're sorry that you were injured in that collision. Let me put you on to our screener. I swear to God. So I said, all right, fine. Let me see what happens. I held on. Next woman answers the phone, very nice lady, told her the same thing. She wanted to put me through a 2-stage screening process before she would let me talk. This is one attorney trying to talk to another attorney. So you can imagine what the clients have to go through.
Right.
And it's unacceptable.
That is very true. And let me tell you, the one thing that is a big wake-up call is when someone calls you out of the blue, a provider, and say, hi, we're treating your client. I just want to verify representation. The guys that are in the big firms that have multi hundreds of clients will say, sure, let me check the system, and I'll let you know if we're representing this person. I'll know immediately if I'm representing this person because I meet all these people personally. Either I meet them personally or I meet them by Zoom or phone call, but I meet all of them and I know all of their names and all their situations. So I'll know if I'm representing this person. But that is a huge wake-up call when I hear people say, oh, let me just check because I don't know if we represent this person or not. I don't recognize the name.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you talk about these types of situations. Well, you know, intake, okay, and the importance of intake. And I've seen individuals, good, and they may even be, and particularly at a boutique firm where, they're trying to handle everything themselves, and maybe they've done they may even have a Center City office. They're paying through the nose for all these resources, and yet the intake itself doesn't meet the standards, right? For two successful attorneys like yourself who see a massive priority, I mean, talk about the importance in having a great intake, because I know, Jeff, you give your cell phone out, I've seen it up close where, because now digital marketing companies can record those calls. I mean, I heard somebody, I've heard some calls from a marketing company that I connected an attorney with. And the individual called me and said, listen to this, okay? Huh. And the intake person was getting out of bed at 2 o'clock. And I'm just saying, talk about how you both prioritize intake and the importance of the face of the place. You have this whole, really professional situation, and yet the front lines are just as important as anything.
So an intake to me is a conversation that you're having with your client. It's not simply fill out the form and have the answers there. Because everything that you talk about with your client leads to other things. And if you just take at face value the answers to the intake, that's one thing. But if you don't ask questions and you don't follow up and learn about what your client's situation is, you're not going to have a good intake. So for instance, you may ask a whole bunch of questions about your client's employment and their duties and all this stuff, but you may not realize that they had a prior condition that would have affected their ability to perform their job or not. And a lot of times you'll get, there's always a section. I'm sure every law firm, when they do an intake, has a section on prior accidents or injuries. Well, prior accidents and prior injuries are not the same as prior conditions. And many people don't have prior accidents. They have prior conditions, like a lower back injury that required surgery, but it wasn't from an injury. It was from a condition that just manifested itself. He got out of bed the wrong way. And you don't know that if you ask what prior accidents or injuries have you had, and they answer you, that's not gonna fit that answer. So when you do the intake and you don't realize that the guy had prior back surgery because he didn't have any other injuries, so you left it at that, it's not going to suffice. That's just a stupid example.
Well, in your world, you constantly hear pre-existing conditions from the defense, who more obviously knows that is ridiculous. If you've been working as an iron worker for 20 years and you got hurt in high school and you have a scar on your back, but you've been working as a construction worker for 20 years, clearly that pre-existing injury did not affect your work life.
That is a big, big misnomer. People think, I don't know why, but they do. They think that, well, I had a prior accident, I better keep my mouth shut because I don't want the attorney if the attorney knows that I had a prior problem, he may not want to take this case. And the problem is that if we don't know that you had a prior problem and you keep it hush-hush and they find out that you did and they ask you and you deny it, then it's going to come back to haunt you. It's going to ruin your credibility.
Well, in your world, Steve, can pre-existing injuries impact the case?
Of course, yeah. They can always impact the case, either, usually negatively, but not necessarily. I mean, I'll have a client come in, and Jeff is right. You know, I use a form that I fill out during my interview, but we don't have clients fill out forms. I fill out the form as I'm talking to them. and the form is changeable. It's changeable. It enables me to make it as long or as short as I want to. So when a client comes into me, I ask them what their prior medical history is, not just their prior injuries, not just their prior accidents, although I ask them that too. But what is your prior medical history? What condition? And everybody's got something. Everybody's got some condition. Because I need to know right off the bat what I'm going to be faced with. And I say to them, listen, the insurance carrier is going to index you. They're going to check on the computer. They're going to find out all the doctors that you've gone to. They're going to get your insurance. They're going to know where you went for your medical treatment. So if I don't know, I can't help you. So usually the client, when they hear that, then they will come forward and they'll tell me mostly everything. Sometimes they miss. And then I've got to go back to them later when I found out and try to find out what happened.
Jeff, you told me something one time, and I'll never forget it. It was...
I know what it is before you even say it.
Go ahead, say it.
It's the surveillance, right?
It's the surveillance.
Yeah. So a lot of my clients will say, I can't, you know, when they take their deposition, how long can you drive? Oh, I can't drive. I don't drive. Can't drive at all. And then there's surveillance that shows that they went around the corner and went to the supermarket to get some stuff and then drove a couple miles to get to another appointment and then drove home. And then I have to have them explain why they said they can't drive and then they drove. Nothing wrong with being able to drive, of course. It doesn't mean you're not disabled from your job, but it does mean if you say you can't drive and you're shown driving, that your credibility is not great. So they do the surveillance to undermine your credibility most of the time, not gotcha moments like, aha, if you could do this, you could be working. That's the old standard of, you know, if this guy's caught on videotape doing this, he could definitely do his job.
Well, Steve, you were kind of, kind of going in that direction where you want your client, you know, you need to know everything.
Not only do I need to know everything, I've got to warn them about certain things. And let me raise another issue that you haven't even asked about yet, and that's social media.
Wait a second. Hold on. That was my next point, Steve. Yeah, but no.
And, Steve's I was, right. Social media is a big one.
And no. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
One of the things that I constantly drill into my clients.
Please go on the weddings and make sure that you were in every picture on social media. Oh, no. You mean the opposite.
No.
Right? Exactly.
Exactly. And they're like, well, a lot of them, some of them say, no problem.
Stay off of social media.
Some of them say, how long do I have to do it? As long as I'm representing you, I don't want to see anything on your Facebook page, on your Instagram page, on TikTok. I don't want to see anything. And I've had clients get burned because they don't listen to me. I was representing one client who was a contractor. He did masonry, he did carpentry, various things. And he told me that he couldn't work. And I was handling the case on that basis because we were trying to prove a wage loss claim. He was in his own business, which is difficult to prove a loss of earnings claim to begin with because people sometimes hide their money. But I was trying to prove a wage loss claim. So I said to him, stay off of social media. I don't want to see it. Don't worry. I'm not doing anything, I promise. Next thing I know, I sat down one day and I decided to go through the Facebook pages of some of the clients. There's a picture of him installing a bathroom. I almost lost my mind.
By the way, how long were you representing him?
A while. Yeah. A while. And then there are the clients that say, well, yeah, I can't work. How long do I have to stay out of work? Well, you stay out of work for as long as you have to stay out of work. I don't want you to lose money. I don't want you to stay out of work and lose your income to build a case. But if you can't work, don't work.
Well, the video and the surveillance. I made this point, and Jeff, this is when you schooled me. Last year's World Series. What's the guy's name? Adalis or the big home run hitter for Texas, who got injured while he was hitting in the first game. He hit the winning home run in the ALCS, and then he went to the World Series. Well, he's playing in the first game of the World Series. He hurts his back, doesn't play the rest of the series, right? Here's a guy making millions of dollars, right? And I made this point. When I saw it, I went, holy cow. When they won that World Series, here's a guy. He jumped over the fence and ran out there and The point is, though, just because he can jump over the fence doesn't mean he can play.
Sure.
And so when I said that to you, Jeff, you said, well, it's about being honest. In other words, here's a guy who we don't even have to ask this question. If he could have played, he would have played. He's playing baseball.
Of course.
He's making millions of dollars. He's literally playing for free no matter what he does, because no matter how much money he makes, he's worth $100 million. And it's the World Series. But when it, so in other words, just because you're surveilled in something, or just because, you know, you're walking or something like that, doesn't mean you can work. At the same time, like you said, Jeff, don't lie.
That's right.
Because really, right, you know, if you lie, it's just about the credibility.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's a very interesting type of, and social media is not your friend. From what I understand, you can't even take your pictures down. Is that correct?
No, you're not supposed to take stuff down.
Man, it's a whole different world. And as somebody who represents somebody, your point is made. You got to know. Let's talk about scenarios where the Tuias would work together. Okay. And I'm not talking about building a house and you help with the, you know, with the wood. And I'm talking about on a case. Let's put a scenario together.
The traditional best scenario that we can put together, in my opinion, would be if my client was driving as a tractor trailer driver for a company and another tractor trailer driver cut him off, or her, and rolled the truck down the embankment, and this poor person was absolutely not only disabled, but requiring multiple surgeries, and they found the guy that cut her off. And that driver worked for a very large company who had a very large motor vehicle policy, which really like over $1 million. And this, my client had an underinsured motorist coverage for her policy personally. And, this poor woman never could return to work again.
So you,
there's a workers' compensation claim, mm-hmm, which I would represent her for, which would get her wage loss benefits, which would also get her medical benefits for the duration that she needed it. And then there would be a case against the third party, which would be, in the law, third party doesn't mean number three, it means other. So an other party besides her employer, since under the workers' comp law, you can't sue your employer. And then Steve would sue that third party on her behalf.
So it's a negligence claim against that.
Exactly. And my client would recover economic damages for the workers' compensation claim. And Steve would then be able to have my client's workers' compensation carrier reimbursed to an extent, depending on the amount of the third party recovery, and get her what's called non-economic damages, pain, suffering, loss of life pleasures, all kinds of stuff that you can't readily calculate due to her suffering of the accident. And that would give her two cases.
So having said that, so just say they walked in Gross and Kenny, and let me ID the show. You're listening to the Jeff Gross Show here on WWDB Talk 860. Jeff's guest on the broadcast is Steve Wolf, who is the founder and owner of the law offices of Stephen E. Wolf here in Bucks County. And so personal injury attorney. And we're talking about a third party case. Okay. You get the case at this point, Jeff Gross. They walk into your office and what's
or
the process?
Or
I was just going to say, because it's a tractor chair or a family member, you know, but either way, it comes in the case comes to you first. At what point do you send it to Steve?
Well, as soon as I identify that there's a third-party claim, I'm going to call Steve. So obviously, from the get-go, when I do my intake, like we just talked about, I will say, well, this is a good third-party claim. Let me call Steve and see if I can connect him. And what I try to do is institute, as soon as possible, a relationship between not just me and my client, but between Steve and my client, so that this client also is Steve's. And then Steve and I would work together to maximize the value of the claim.
And so, Steve, you get the call from Jeff. Let's put this scenario together. The The accident happened a month ago. They walk in Jeff's office maybe yesterday. They try to, you know, work things out themselves with the employer. But of course, that we often know where that goes. And then now a little reality has jumped in, and Jeff surmises, okay, there's a third party situation here with the work situation, and you get that case. It's a month down the road from the actual accident. Where do you go?
Well, the first thing I do is thank Jeff for the referral. And I make it very clear to this client, listen, Jeff's the expert. I don't dip my toe in anything related to workers' compensation. He's the expert. He knows what he's doing. Everything related to your work comp claim, I want you to talk to him about. You can ask me questions. I'll try to help you, but likelihood is I'm going to send you to Jeff about that. Then I'll contact Jeff again, and I want to get copies because it's a month later now, so he's been already handling the file. I want to get his file. I want to know exactly what he has, because maybe he's already collected the application for workers' compensation benefits. Maybe he's gotten some medical records. Maybe he's gotten some wage loss information. So I want to share files with him. And I'll also tell him, if you need anything from me, let me know. I'll send you whatever I have. If I take a deposition in my case, I'll give him a copy of the deposition. I'll ask him to do the same to me. If there's medical testimony, we can share that. The whole idea is to try to make the client whole from both ends. And if the two attorneys are working well together, that's what should happen.
The best way to describe it from a layman's perspective is like a relay race. I would meet Steve. We would get together and say, all right, here's the game plan. And we would huddle and say, here's how we're going to maximize the speed that we get the best result here. So I run at my fastest after we have our meeting, and I get everything I need to get. I get all the medical records. I have the client's treatment all ready to roll. I have my medical experts ready to go. Everything's in line, and I am pursuing my claim. When I get to the point where I'm either going to make a workers' compensation settlement or the time has come is coming where Steve needs to put his case into suit, which is a 2-year time period. So sometime before that time, I will call Steve and I'll say, how are you doing with your third party claim? Here's what I got. Here's my entire file. Here are my expert depositions. Here's my client's deposition. He'll be able to have all of that at his disposal. And then when I settle my workers' compensation claim, then I pass the baton to Steve, and he runs at his fastest and his hardest. And just like I was able to achieve what I was able to achieve, Steve will be able to achieve it. And then together, the result that I get will become exponentially higher at Steve's third-party settlement, because the better I do for my client from a workers' comp standpoint, the better Steve will do on the third party end, because it's not actually derivative, but it is somewhat derivative of what I do. So the larger I make my claim, the exponentially higher Steve's claim will be on the third party case, depending on the insurance company's coverage of this claim. And so that's why I said millions of dollars that beforehand to give you the best possible situation.
And sometimes the third-party case will end faster. I'll be able to settle it faster. There may be a limited third-party policy. The responsible party may have a limited policy. There may be no uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. There could be various issues that cause my case to end quicker than Jeff's work.
How often does that happen? Not as often, or does it happen?
It depends
on the severity of the claim.
Yeah, it depends. My understanding is that work comp carriers are not particularly generous either.
But there's no limitation. So while Steve is stuck with limited coverage in terms of their limits of the policy, if you have a $15,000 policy and that's all you're getting on a catastrophic claim, Steve can get that taken care of right away. If he's got a multi-million dollar combined single limit policy on a tractor trailer case, and I have workers' compensation where my client is in bad shape, needs two surgeries to different parts of the body, then my case can go much longer without disrupting Steve's value.
Communication between the attorneys.
And you just took the words.
We're in the zone, me and you.
It's critical that the personal injury attorney have an open line of communication with the workers' comp attorney, because you don't want things happening in one case that's going to hurt the other case. you've got to be on the same page. So it's critical that there's an open line of communication. We know what each of us are doing. We know what our clients are doing in each case. We know what the medical people are doing in each case.
Well, what, and when you talk about the medical, typically, does that typically go through the work comp?
Yeah, it always goes through the workers' comp. The workers' compensation carrier is responsible for two things: wage loss benefits and medical benefits. The medical benefits are being paid by the workers' comp carrier.
No, but I'm talking about, like, for example, the usually, because we've talked about it in the past, where somebody will try to go to their family doctor, and the family doctor's not going for that. And so there's a network of medical providers that will work with the the injured workers and the injury victims, personal injury victims. So to typically speak in this type of case, does the injured worker typically work through that medical network?
Yeah, and then we try to make that medical network our medical network, not the employer panel physician medical network, which they have this. There's a rule that they must treat with the panel doctors for the first 90 days, but there are qualifications on that rule and exceptions to that rule. And so whenever there's a situation where we can basically exculpate that, you know, that captivated coverage where they have to treat with their doctors for their employer, we do that. We will suggest doctors that will be patient advocates for them.
And go ahead, Steve.
And there's another aspect of that. As Jeff mentioned, in many cases, there's a 90-day period during which the injured person, the client, can't go to anyone other than a workers' comp panel physician. If they can't meet an exception to that, and they still need quality medical care, I have to communicate with Jeff, and we've got to work out who the client is ultimately going to go to get the treatment, so that we're both able to work with that doctor. Because believe it or not, there are a lot of doctors out there, a lot, especially specialists, that will not get involved in a workers' comp case, won't get involved in an injury case. They don't want to be bothered. They don't want to write reports. They don't want to have to go to court. They don't want to deal with lawyers. So we've got to make sure that we've got the doctors working on both sides of this case that are going to be able to help us on both ends.
Why is that? You know, it's literally speaking, I know there's a network, okay, of people who really care about, you know, those who get injured in personal injury and negligence situations. But if there wasn't, they'd be screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, how important is the medical to your case, Steve?
It's critical. It's absolutely critical. I've had situations where the client has either come to me late and has already started treatment with a doctor, or doesn't listen to my recommendation about what he or she needs and will just pick a doctor out of off the internet. And then when I try to get what I need for this case, something as simple as a report, I get no cooperation. So that makes the case much more difficult, because then I either have to get the client to somebody else, or I've got to get a third doctor to look at all the records and give me an opinion.
Well, I was going to say that.
Is the remedy. That's how you'd handle that. If they're not going to cooperate, you have to get a third-party doctor.
And I have happened to have some of these conversations. So it shouldn't – I'm being sarcastic when I say this, but what I've heard of these – so-called independent medical exams, right?
They're not independent, but
exactly.
Go ahead.
But they'll spend 7 minutes, okay? And thankfully, and I'm sure this has happened in the past, where somebody has treated with a doctor who, you know, refuses to cooperate in regards to depositions or testifying or any or reports. So, but I guess there is a favorable situation, because the IME doctors are spending 6 minutes with them. If you can get somebody you can get somebody to spend 3 minutes with them, it should be a nice, I don't know how, I'm being sarcastic when I say it, but how do you remedy that situation?
Well, let me tell you what we do in our office. No client ever goes to, and I don't call them independent medical examinations, I call them defense medical,
right, of course.
But no client will go to an examination by an adverse doctor without a representative from our office going with them. And I don't mean me. I don't mean a secretary. I'm talking about a nurse. I have nurses that I regularly refer cases to. Whenever we have a defense medical examination, my legal assistant gets on the phone, calls up one or more of the nursing companies or the nurses directly and say, listen, we want to coordinate this examination with you. We won't let it happen unless you can make it.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, you guys are like birds of a feather. It's amazing that you haven't known each other for 40 years. 40 years experience?
45. But who's counting?
Yet you're still getting carded when you have to get, when you go to the Acme and you want to get the wine for, I hear you.
But Steve's got the trick on best seats in the football
season. He does. He does. I'm going out.
I got lucky.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. By the way, that's a secret we just gave to the entire Delaware Valley.
That's why they should be listening to the station.
Exactly. A point I'd like to make, having the resources as a personal injury attorney. You said something at the beginning. We only have 5 minutes left. You said something at the beginning. You're preparing for the end game right on day one. The willingness to go to court. Okay, Jeff, we've had these conversations, but also as when you said that immediately, I know, because I do legal radio for a living, that you have the resources to do what it takes to be successful and represent that client. You've been around a long time. You're not sitting here worried about the rent, okay, and not getting a defense, not getting the best expert. Talk about the importance of being able to compete with those insurance companies.
It is very, very expensive to pursue litigation. It's expensive from a comp standpoint, from Jeff's standpoint. It's expensive from my standpoint. There are many times when I will ask a specialist for a report, $2,500 for a two-page report, $5,000 or $7,000 for a deposition. And I may have multiple experts. I've got a case going right now where I've got a case against a major mall in this area where a light pole fell onto my client. A 10-foot steel light pole fell onto my client. I had to hire a metallurgist. We spent $20,000 on the metallurgist who had to go and inspect the pole. We're going to be bringing that pole. I'm going to be hiring a trucking company to bring that pole into the courtroom so the jury can see it, and hopefully the judge will let them pick it up and see exactly how heavy that is. So you've got to have the resources and the desire to do it, because a lot of law firms won't do that.
Absolutely. And work comp?
There's a little bit of a tweak nuance for workers' comp. It's very expensive, but by the time I'm done with my case, Steve will be ready to roll without having to lay out a dime if we play our cards right. Because in the workers' compensation world, my fees for depositions of medical experts, which can be $3,000 to $5,000, sometimes more. My fees for other types of experts, if I have to use them, will all be reimbursed by the workers' compensation carrier when I either win or make a settlement. When that happens, if I settle the workers' comp case, Steve will have the goods for all of the medical experts that I've paid for already so that he can use them in support of the prosecution of his claim.
By the way, I've been doing this for 10 years and never heard that.
You never heard that, huh?
I haven't. Yeah. That is fantastic. Real quick, contingency fee agreement. I always like to cover it because how much out of pocket cost does it cost? A client to get a consultation and retain your services, Jeff Gross?
Zero.
Okay.
Because we do not charge on an hourly basis. A contingent fee is just that. It's contingent on a successful recovery. My fee is limited to 20%. So I do not charge a third or 40 or 50% of my recovery of the claim. I charge 20%.
That's by law, right?
That's by law. And there are circumstances in unreasonable contests where I can get the carrier to pay my client's legal fees.
Okay, Steve, in your world, how much is out-of-pocket cost does it cost to retain you?
Zero. Same as Jeff. Client comes in. I've got to be very careful about what I take because the money's coming out of that. They're not responsible for any costs. So I may have a case where I may have to put out $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, and if I lose, the client doesn't reimburse me. That's my loss.
Well, I mean, and that's just putting your money where your mouth is, and those are important parts to this entire process when somebody's looking for an attorney, especially outstanding attorneys like yourself. When they think they can't afford you, there's no out-of-pocket cost, and that goes for those experts that we're talking about. Gentlemen, we're coming to the end of the fastest hour in radio. Steve Wolf, contact information if somebody wants to get in touch.
Sure. My email address is steve at wolflawoffice.com. That's W-O-L-F-E, lawoffice.com, all one word. My phone number is 215-364-4450. As I say, we like to have the clients come to the office. If you're disabled, you need us to come to you, we'll come to you.
The website.
Website is www.wolflawoffice.com.
Awesome. Jeff Gross, if you will, take us home.
Best place to reach me is by phone on my cell phone, which I give out to everybody, and my wife hates that. But it is 215-512-1500. It's a great number.
It is.
215-512-1500. And I do have, of course, an email address and a website. My email address is jgross@gk-wcl.com. And my website is www.phillaworkerscomp.com.
Awesome. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Jeff Gross Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We want to thank our host, Jeff Gross, of course, and Steve Wolf, our guest of the law offices of Stephen E. Wolf. It's been a fantastic show, gentlemen. On behalf of Jeff Gross and Steve Wolf, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.